Hello and welcome. It's time for another episode of Coffee Talk, where we're always ready for that next cup of coffee. My name is Trevor Huth, and joining me once again after an extended absence of a week, he's off the seven-day IL, aka a business conference. It's Nate the Great Kosher. Nate, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks. Thanks for the welcome back. If my voice sounds a little bit different, it's spring allergy season. And
I would like to say same.
Yes, that hits you as well, huh?
Yes, it does. Yes, it
so
does.
Every year I might sneeze a million times. So I don't think I'm going to sneeze, but I've been battling the pollen all day.
If he does, just keep count and we'll see who can get closest to how many times Nate sneezed during the podcast. There you go. Tweet at Coffee Talk PL. How many times do you think Nate sneezed during the podcast? I may throw in a couple different sounding ones just to throw you off. We'll see what happens.
Over, under.
Well, Nate, before we get anywhere, I want to once again thank Jake Crumpler, who helped us out last week while you were gone by filling in as a co-host. If you have not listened to that episode, make sure to do that. It's on all of our feeds. He did a fantastic job, and we are ever so grateful that he was able to fill in for you.
Yes, thank you, Jake. Really do appreciate that, so we could get another episode out. And he does a lot of different fantasy stuff for Pitcherless. So
he does. Half the episode was just him listing what he does. So, No, it was great to have him. And, of course, it's great to have you back. And one day we might have both of you here. That could be really fun.
That would be cool. Yeah.
We'll see what happens. But it is Coffee Talk, which means we're going to talk about baseball players as well as the wonderful coworkers we have at Pitcher List. But we're going to jump into some baseball players now with our What's Brewing segment. And what's brewing? Well, I'll tell you what's brewing at Mississippi State is a pitcher who can throw the ball with both hands. And I don't mean just like, you know, if you or I try to throw offhanded, Nate, he can touch 90 plus from both sides as a pitcher, which is very impressive. I just looked up the pronunciation of his name. I'm probably still going to botch it, so my apologies to him, but it is Gerangelo Cinche is his name, and he's doing some impressive stuff down at Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's I had never heard of this guy until just recently. I think he went viral for a clip of him throwing with either hand, but like you said, he's hitting 90 plus on each side, which is just unheard of. And I see in the article they call him a switch pitcher, which is a funny term you do not usually hear. And he was actually drafted by the Brewers last summer, but then decided to go back to college. So he'll be there this year and then next year when he's draft eligible. But says he is the 259th ranked prospect, best prospect in the class. Very strange, but do you think he has a shot at the big leagues?
I can't say. I haven't seen him, but when you can throw 90 plus from both sides, I mean, you got a shot. It'd be really interesting to have a switch pitcher back in baseball. We haven't had one in a while since can you come up with the name? I got the name. I'm just asking if you can come up with it.
No, I don't know.
I always botch his last name. Pat Venedet, Venditti, something along those lines. I know the last name was that, but that was our last switch pitcher.
No, I don't even know who that is.
He pitched for, I want to say, Oakland, and I'm not sure if anybody else. Last name is spelled Venditte, and for some reason I can never figure out how to pronounce it. But yeah, he spent time with Oakland, Toronto, Seattle, the Dodgers, the Giants, the Marlins, and I think that's just when he got some major league time. So
it has been done before. I was curious if it had been done.
It has. The last team he was on was the Marlins in 2020. Appeared in three games, threw four and a third scoreless innings, and then was outrighted off the 40-man and has not come back. So, So yeah, he's actually, apparently, according to his Wikipedia page, working full time in Peoria, Illinois, right near me. So I could go get some tips from him.
There you go.
What's going on. But yeah, so we haven't had one since 2020. It's 2024 now, if no one's paying attention. So it's been a few years, and maybe Sinche is going to be the first one. It's really cool to have at bare minimum. It's just a cool story to have going on and a cool guy to follow. Like you said, he got drafted, so I've kind of followed a little bit. If I remember, all the draft reports say he was better as a righty than lefty in terms of stuff. But, you know, he got drafted by the Brewers, I'm assuming, lower than he wanted to. Didn't get the signing bonus that he wanted. And so he said, I'm going to bet on myself. I'm headed to school. And as it turns out, he's getting a little publicity. Publicity doesn't always mean more dollars and higher draft position, but publicity isn't a bad thing either. So if he can keep it up and if he can, you know, develop and be consistent and about the same level of pitcher from both sides, and that's where it gets hard. But if he can be about the same level of pitcher from both sides, he could see his draft stock skyrocket, and maybe he gets really good at one side, and just like a two-way player, he just stops doing that. Or like Cedric Mullins, he just stops switch pitching and sticks to one thing. Cedric Mullins, obviously a hitter, not a pitcher, but you know, he took off after he stopped switch hitting. So that could be a path for Sinche as well. It just is a matter of, I think, how things come along with his ability to switch pitch.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Like eventually, as he developed, you think he would stick with whatever he was better at or whatever he felt more comfortable with, and he would, you know, not switch pitch as much. I also could see him. I was thinking about where would these skills be best suited? And I was thinking about coming out of the bullpen, being able to throw, you know, as a lefty or a righty would be tremendously helpful for a team and, you know, having that weapon. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. It sounds like, though, he does have, like, legitimate stuff with either arm. So it'll be interesting to follow his career and see if he makes the bigs.
Yeah, that will be super interesting. I mean, I haven't seen the stuff, but if it's legit, and he can start to locate it and, you know, figure out how to use it, how to sequence it, where to place it in the zone, he's got every chance. And again, it would just be fun for baseball. So I'm certainly here for it. Certainly here to excited to see how his career plays out at Mississippi State. But Nate, another pitcher has had his college career play out. We're kind of waiting to see how the pro career is going to play out. So far, it's pretty good. He's in AAA. It's a little known guy. I don't know if anybody's going to have heard his name before. It's Paul Skeens. I'm kidding. Obviously, yeah. Very famous name. First overall draft pick with the Pirates. He's in AAA, knocking on the doorstep. Who knows when he's actually going to make it? It's probably going to be soon. That's what I said in the expected starting pitchers this week, is that it's got to be coming. Like, he's knocking on the door. There's going to be some change going on there, especially because Pirates aren't, you know, I mean, I know it's early in the season, but the Pirates aren't dwelling at the bottom of the division right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they might make a push. They might call up Skeens, and he's been having some impressive outings recently.
I think they're doing probably better than anyone expected. I mean, they're usually toward the, like you said, it is early, but they're usually typically toward the bottom of the NL Central. And right now they're sitting about 500. So if you're a Pirates fan, I think you'd be happy with that. But what I was thinking with including this Skeens again this week, I know we've talked about him, was just the injury with all the Tommy John stuff going on. And I saw a story about he's thrown the most 100-mile-an-hour pitches this season by far out of anyone in the majors or minors. And the stats are outrageous. I mean, he's doing great. But I did think, you know, with the arms and all the injuries, does that present something unique for the Pirates? And I would think they're going to handle him very carefully in his development.
Yeah. As you should, he's a top pitching prospect. You need to be careful. You need to do what you believe is best for that pitcher. I just keep thinking about Eury Pérez. Like, I'm trying to formulate a thought about it, but I just keep thinking about Eury Pérez because he was handled with kid gloves by the Marlins last year. And it didn't it didn't help save him from an injury, right? He's out all year this year. So you got to do what's best for what you think is best for your pitcher, obviously. But, you know, kid gloves aren't necessarily the answer. I don't know. I hate that all these injuries are happening to all these good pitchers. It's really hard. And I wish I had a solution, but I am not a doctor nor smart enough to have one. But I wish Skeens the best of health, and hopefully, hopefully he's got a pretty sustained, healthy career. The only thought I have is you see all the pitchers going down. If you think Paul Skeens is ready, I don't know why you're wasting the bullets.
True.
I don't know why you're wasting the pitches in AAA. If you think he's ready for the majors, which maybe they don't, maybe they see some stuff. I'm not sure what that would be at this point, but maybe they see something that, like, you know, maybe he needs to improve his hitting before he becomes a starting pitcher in our rotation. That was a joke, but you know, yeah. Well, maybe they see something and they're like, you know, we want you to get a little bit better here. And, you know, we think that you're not set up for success right now, so we want you to take another start to work on this. Then I guess I get that. As far as I can tell, Paul Skeens is as close to ready as he probably is going to get. So I don't know why they're wasting the bullets by having him start in AAA, but, you know, that's their decision. Obviously, I don't make the decision for the Pirates.
Yeah, you're right on the Marlins. That's a good comparison to Perez, because I had him last year on one of my teams, and he looked great, but they shut him down. I don't know what the inning mark was that he hit, but I remember toward the end of the year, he was just shut down, and like you said, that didn't end up making a difference. So maybe Skeens will be the exception. Maybe he'll be fine, and that would be great for baseball and for Pirates fans. And now with Jones looking great, that would give them, you know, a couple of dominant young arms. So it's going to be right around the corner. I mean, I would think he can't, there's nothing more for him to do. He's putting up ridiculous statistics in AAA.
Right. But I mean, I'm just saying, Paul Skeens and Jared Jones as your 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
That'll get the job done.
Yes, it will. I know that. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch. I mean, that makes me think back to the, you know, Maddox Glavine days. And
completely different type of pitchers.
Completely, yeah. Not the same style of pitchers, but like dominant, having a dominant rotation.
That's for sure. But we're not throwing you nasty stuff and dotting corners. We're just gonna throw high octane fastballs directly by you.
This is not Maddox playing chess, but it just makes me think of those, you know, two guys together. So
it's like if who was it? Was that Glavin's changeup was actually a 100-mile-an-hour fastball?
Other than that, they're exactly the same.
No, I see where you're going with that, Nate. You're talking about having some top end talent in your rotation. Yes. That's absolutely. I mean, it's, if you want to make the comparison to Philly, is the one that pops out to me with Wheeler Nola. Or I guess old school Mets, even though they had four or five deep back in the good Matt Harvey days, Jacob DeGrom, Noah Syndergaard. I think Steven Matz was in that group. He was doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was nuts. I can't remember who the fifth guy was, and I feel like it was someone. Four out of five ain't bad.
The injury bug got him. Good. Injury bug got that. Yeah. I mean, they look like they were going places.
Yeah. But speaking of a young core, Nate, do you know who has a really good young core right now?
The Baltimore Orioles.
Yes. You must have the access to the notes.
Yeah.
The Baltimore Orioles have a really, really good young core. I mean, obviously we know Adley, we know Gunner, we know Jackson Holliday, who I'm sure we'll hit eventually.
Yes. Don't cut Holliday. Don't drop him.
No. Yeah,
I would not recommend that.
Stick with it. We talked about that last week. Just stick with it. It'll be fine. Colton Cowser has been showing, you know, he's ready. And obviously there's all the guys at AAA. But do you know who's kind of lost in the shuffle right now? And I know you know.
Right.
That's Jordan Westberg.
But you're right. That's kind of why I wanted to talk about it. I think he's getting overshadowed, basically, by all these other Oriole fans. Or not Oriole fans, sorry. Or young Oriole players. But he just took home AL Player of the Week. So definitely putting his name out there. And he went 11 for 23, 478, batting average, 2 home runs, 8 RBI, and a triple for good measure. But I agree with you. I think he is kind of forgotten. And I was looking at him with, depending on your league, once again, multi-position eligibility across the infield, second and third base, which is always helpful and gives guys a boost.
Yeah, it is good in fantasy to have that that multi-position eligibility. And man, I traded Westberg preseason because I thought he was just going to get lost in the shuffle, and I'm kind of regretting it now. I mean, he's going off. It's awesome to see. And to think, we're talking about this guy getting lost in the shuffle. He was the 30th overall pick in 2020. He was not a first rounder. He was in competitive balance A. That was the year Houston didn't have a first round pick because of the scandal.
Oh, that's so right.
He was the first pick in competitive balance A, technically the 30th overall pick. And we're talking about him like he's just getting passed over.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
We even kind of talked about him like that during the draft because the Orioles that year had number two or three overall, I believe. And they took Heston Kerstad, and he was projected to go, you know, a top 10, top 15, somewhere in there, not top two or top three. And so, you know, in the prospect community, we're all kind of like, hey, are they just trying to take a haircut at the top so they can afford a high end prep guy? And we all thought the high end prep guy they wanted was Nick Bisco, who the Rays wound up taking, I think, 24th that year. And so we're like, well, they just didn't get the guy they wanted, and they just wind up with Jordan Westberg, who was good. Nobody said he was bad. But we're all kind of like, oh, man, that might have been the Orioles' backup plan. And it turns out, man, he's hitting the ball.
Yeah, no one's backup. I mean, he's playing great.
From the jump, I mean, from the draft, everybody's like, it's just a backup plan. Like, he's lost in the shuffle. It's good for Jordan Westberg. I mean, I liked him pre-draft. I liked him coming up and everything. It's so interesting to see how he's just kind of been in the shadows of the rest of this really high-end prospect organization. And I don't know if that's been good or bad for him, but he's coming out of it and performing. So it's really awesome to see.
Yeah, and he's hitting over 300 for the year, 333, with almost, 400 on base percentage. And I think it's, you know, if you drafted him before the season, even in a redraft league, you have to be happy with the results so far.
Yeah. Can we talk about that 2020 draft for a second? I'm sorry. I'm just looking through it right now, and it is crazy.
Yeah, let me pull that up.
Obviously, Torkelson was 1-1 that year for the Tigers. Kerstad went second overall. Max Meyer came out of that draft, and he's been hurt forever, but came back and has looked really good this year before being sent down. He'll be back soon. Fourth overall was Asa Lacy, who's going through his own stuff right now, not doing – I mean, he's gone so far off course since being the fourth overall pick, and it'd be cool if he finds it again. I think he's either hurt or he's taking time away from the game right now, something like that. Austin Martin debuted this year. He was drafted by the Blue Jays. He debuted with the Twins. But, like, Emerson Hancock came out of this draft. Reed Detmers came out of this draft. Garrett Crochet came out of this draft. Patrick Bailey came out of this draft. Justin Foscue just debuted and then got hurt. He's out of this draft. Pete Crow Armstrong, Garrett Mitchell, Jordan Walker.
Jordan Walker, who's already kind of had an up-and-down career, it seems like.
Cade Cavalli came out of this draft. Jared Schuster came out of this draft. Tyler Soderstrom came out of this draft. Bobby Miller, that's just the first. Austin Wells was drafted just before Bobby Miller. Bobby Miller was the last pick of the first round. That's just the first round.
There's a lot of green check marks there. You know, teams talk about hit or misses in the draft. A lot of these guys have already hit.
Do you know who else came out of that draft? 44th overall, Jared Jones.
Keep it coming. Oh, wow. Yeah.
50th overall, Evan Carter. 54th overall, Mason Wynn. It's crazy. Wow. Like, this was 63rd was Tink Hens, who hasn't debuted, but, you know, he's doing good things. Alec Burleson was 70th overall. Yeah, this draft is great. Kyle Harrison was 85th.
Yeah, well,
isn't this right? I mean, crazy. I can keep going. Kobe Mayo was drafted 103rd. I don't know why I'm going to keep going, but I am. Spencer Strider, 126th overall from this draft. Colt Keith, 132nd.
So you could say arguably the player who's had the best career thus far and just got hurt, but was drafted 126th.
Yes. Uh-huh. And you can also say things like Joe Boyle went 143rd, Brandon Fatt went 149, Bryce Elder at 156, Gavin Stone 159.
Wow. Man.
That 2020 draft is showing out.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't even think I knew that until I just looked it up for Westberg, and I was just scrolling through, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Clayton Dieter. I saw him at 66. The Yankees are excited about him.
Yeah, I didn't even name everybody who's debuted yet. Like, this no. Luke Little came out of that draft. It's crazy.
This is very, talent. Yeah, very impressive. Oh, you know, 33. Slade. I don't know.
Oh, Slade Ciccone. Yeah. Slade Ciccone's out of that draft.
First career win yesterday for the D-backs.
And he pitched well. It was kind of an emergency call up for him, too. He didn't know it was going to happen a whole lot beforehand. They're just like, hey, you're coming up. And he came up and pitched really well.
Yeah, he had a quality start.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
maybe we might need a just standalone 2020 draft episode.
Just for an hour, we're just going to break down this 2020 draft. Anybody who's doing well and anybody who's not. And what's crazy is that the Tigers draft, I thought, was going to be really, really good from that class. And it's turned out to be kind of Spencer Torkelson and Colt Keith. You may get Dylan Dingler still coming through. Book's not closed on him. But, you know, like Trey Cruz, Gage Workman, and Daniel Cabrera have all kind of struggled.
I was going to say Daniel Cabrera. I haven't even heard of him, I don't think.
Is he? Yeah, I was not really. I was super high on him coming out of LSU, that draft class, and I liked his hit tool. I thought he was going to hit, and he just hasn't really. So I was hyped up about just the Tigers class, and it turns out the rest of it was really good. I mean, can you imagine getting Spencer Strider 126th overall? Yeah. And Bryce Elder, too. I mean, it's not like you're getting nothing from him.
Right. No, I mean, these are Gavin Stone. 159th. These are guys, well, you know, give it a few more years and they'll be even more impact. But in this short frame of time since this draft, many, many of these people have already made an impact.
And think about how much it's I mean, the Dodgers rotation is really reliant right now on Bobby Miller and Gavin Stone, both of whom they got in that draft. The You're Braves right. rotation is anchored by Spencer Strider, and they're getting stuff out of Bryce Elder, and they could have gotten stuff from Jared Schuster. They traded him to the White Sox. So there's teams who are getting a good portion of their core and a good portion of what matters for them from this draft. The Orioles included with Jordan Westberg, where this all started.
That's wild.
It's an impressive group, and Nate, it's so impressive that we're going to have to take a timeout just to deal with the fact that we just had to look at all that. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will have more right here on Coffee Talk as a part of the PitcherList Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the PitcherList Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. I am joined by Nate, the Great Kosher. I'm still not over how good the 2020 draft was, but I guess we have to move on. We can't just talk about that this whole episode as much as we probably actually could do that, Nate. But we're ready. We're always ready for our next cup of coffee. And next guy we're going to talk about, I hope it's not just a cup of coffee for him, because I'm really excited about him. That's Mr. Andy Pages from the Los Angeles Dodgers, who has made his debut recently, hit his first career MLB home run. You know, he's been he's kind of one of those prospects who I think people got burnt out on him as a prospect, not because he wasn't talented, just because he was there for a while. Right. So I don't know, Nate. What do you think about Andy Pages?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, once they have success and the post hype, you know, the post hype sleeper, where they people know him, they drop, forget, and they come back, and like, oh yeah, they are good. And so he might fall into that mold. But what I thought was interesting is Jason Hayward's hurt, and so he's been starting every day in the outfield, and so basically a path to an everyday start. Sometimes when these prospects are called up, they might just get a cup of coffee, like we talk about, or get a short run and get turned back down. But I'm thinking with Pies, if he can hit and he does well, I think, you know, he can run with the job, and they'll have to find him a place to hit. Obviously Jason Hayward toward the tail end of his career, so it wouldn't take much probably to overtake him. I know Hayward's defense and leadership and all of that you can't forget about, but at Triple-A he was hitting .371 with 5 home runs in 15 games, so he was raking, and it didn't seem like long before he was going to make an impact.
Yeah,
so I think it's someone to keep an eye on. I'm interested. I think even looking toward later this season, I think it's someone you could pick up.
Yeah, I mean, I like the point you make about trying to find playing time and how he has a path, especially when you're talking about somebody who plays for the Dodgers of Los Angeles. As it turns out, the Dodgers don't care about your fantasy team. And yeah, they're just going to send guys up and down, and they're going to have part-time playing time. And it's just it's a nightmare to the point where I almost don't like rostering Dodgers prospects, because it's just a headache to try to figure it out. But with Pages, I mean, if he's going to hit, he's going to have a spot. And the Dodgers have shown that they will do that. I mean, James Outman played his way into a spot.
Great example.
The other outfielder, Thompson, Trace Thompson played his way into a spot for a little bit there. If he doesn't still have it,
he had a little
they reward good play because they want to win baseball games. So if Pages can come out and keep things going, they'll give him a spot. And you're also right about the prospect fatigue. That is a real thing, and it really happens. And when you see a guy over and over again, and they're always on prospect lists, you kind of just like, okay, like cool. And Pages has been on prospect lists since he was super, super young. So he's kind of a guy we've seen around a lot. I mean, I remember Jeff Ponce tweeting about him when I was first getting into the prospecting. When I first joined up Prospects Live, I remember Jeff Ponce tweeting about him. And that's a long time ago. I'm an old man now. So, I'm 28. But, you know, it's been a while for Pages.
In the life of a prospect, that is an old man.
Yes. Right? Yes, very true. Very true. I've lost my prospect status due to age and the fact that I'm not playing affiliated baseball. But so it's good to see Pages maybe hitting. It's good to see his hot start. I always wondered if the hit tool was going to be enough. I've known forever that he's had power. Everybody's known forever. It doesn't take long for you to figure out that Andy Pages can hit the ball really far. My concern is that, you know, for a while there, it seemed like he was just going to settle into being a 250 with as ever many bombs as that affords him guy, which isn't bad, obviously, but
it worked.
It works. And you just wanted a little more out of the hit tool. Maybe he's got it. So I'm a big fan of Pages. I have him in a bunch of leagues. Again, I mostly play Dynasty, so I've been holding on to him for a little bit. But I do think he has some value, and I hope he can hit, and I hope he can claim a spot on the Dodgers team.
Yeah, likewise. We will see what happens.
Yeah, so another guy, and this time I believe we're going to your neck of the woods here, your fandom, with one of the coolest names in baseball, Blaze Alexander.
Yes, Blaze Alexander, great name. A lot of potential coffee puns here with hot temperature, Blaze. You know, we could go on forever and ever, but he is actually playing well, which is why I wanted to include him here. So another guy who is getting to start almost every day and filling in at shortstop for the D-backs. And this season he's hitting, I'm sure this will not, you know, maintain across a bigger sample size, but he's hitting .321. He has 3 home runs and 13 RBIs. And he's really showing that he belongs. And at least for the foreseeable future, he will be starting at shortstop. He was hurt. I think he just pulled a hamstring or something over the weekend, but minor injury. And so it's just him and Kevin Newman right now for the D-backs at shortstop. And so once again, a guy got an opportunity, and if he does well, I think, you know, he's going to run with it. Perdomo with the Diamondbacks was hurt, which opened up the spot. And then, of course, we talked about Jordan Lawler also being hurt. He may have been an option here, but he's injured. So Blaze jumps in, and so far, so good.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's cool that he's playing well. This is kind of like just taking a knife and just twisting it in me, man. I want to see Jordan Lawler.
I know.
Oh,
I do think, you know, if he hadn't been hurt, he would have come up, but
probably would have been him. And that's nothing against Blaze Alexander, by the way. That is a pro Jordan Lawler statement. Blaze right. Alexander is doing a great job running with the opportunity he's being given, which you love to see. You know, he's a power over hit guy, always has been. If I recall, a great defender, and if I recall, a very good arm.
Yeah.
So,
yep, that's exactly.
So, you know, the power is going to be there. The hit tool may not, but he may play his way into a place where they have to find a spot for him, especially when Lawler comes back, especially when Perdomo comes back. Like, it's going to turn into a crowded infield pretty quick, which is a good problem to have if you're Arizona. But, you know, he's going to have to prove that he belongs up there with somebody who has made an all-star game, right? Perdomo was an all-star. With a guy as talented as Jordan Lawler, assuming he comes back as Jordan Lawler.
Yeah, right.
And that's still a tough road for him.
True. I mean, Lawler with the better pedigree, and being a Diamondbacks fan, they actually kind of had the same problem in the outfield a couple seasons ago, and then ended up getting Lourdes Gurriel from the Blue Jays at what time they traded what's his name? Dalton Varsho, who was a catcher, but also they had an outfield logjam basically because they had Alec Thomas, they had Corbin Carroll. You can only fit so many people onto a baseball field, kind of what we're talking about with the Orioles. So eventually, if there's not any injuries, it makes it hard to figure out. So sometimes injuries, while they're unfortunate, can kind of clear up the picture, you know, and give these guys opportunities.
It can, or it can open up a place where you have some really tough decisions to make as an organization. Because, I mean, you want to stockpile talent if you can, but also you don't want to just not play guys who should be playing, especially if you have other holes you can fill by trading out of your depth. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, the decisions are a long way away. For right now, it is fantastic to see Blaze Alexander doing really well. Especially because he doesn't come in with a huge amount of prospect pedigree. I think he was at his highest probably a mid top 30 guy for the Diamondbacks.
And wouldn't you say that's exactly the coffee talk range kind of that we've gotten to?
Not,
you know, the top of the line people. Like if we had said, hey, keep your eye on Blaze Alexander, I think that's the model. Maybe is he your guy? Is he your coffee talk guy, or you haven't decided yet?
No, it wouldn't be Blaze Alexander. We'll find him. Okay. I'm laughing because I love that you said we're gonna, like, our wheelhouse is that like mid top 30 guy for a team. With that in mind, Nate, let's move on and talk about the number two prospect in the in the Blue Jays organization. That and that's Aurelvis Martinez. I've had many thoughts about Aurelvis Martinez. So I will go ahead and let you start so I don't just take over and steal everything, because I've been watching him and I feel like more or less defending him quite a bit. So let's see what you got, Nate. What are you feeling about Aurelvis Martinez here?
Sure. So obviously huge power, and reason I threw him on here this week is he's just on a crazy hot streak. He homered in 6 out of 7 games, and slash line would put him at an all-star level right now. And let's see, late last week, he hit his 5th homer of the week, 410 feet with a 108.6 mile an hour exit velocity. And that brings his total from that week, 10 for 28, 5 home runs, 1 double, 13 RBIs in 6 games. So yeah, he's on fire right now, and has a lot of power, and seems like he's probably knocking on the door. But as you said, you've been defending him for a while, so I want to hear about that.
Well, I say for a while. He's in AAA right now, Nate. Do you know how old Aurelvis Martinez is?
I don't. Not off the top of my head.
22 years old.
Okay.
He's 22. He has been kicking around professional baseball since 2019. He started as a 17-year-old. He got a lot of attention, and I mean like top 100 level attention from what I saw, or at least for the publications I look at, right around the off season before the 2022 season. So 2021, after that season, is kind of when, in my eyes, maybe I'm wrong about the timeline, but in my eyes, that hype kind of picked up for him, and he became a top 100 in the conversation guy. In many cases, I think he was on top 100 lists.
Sure.
And then he fell off. I'm putting it in air quotes. He fell off because that year in 2022, he hit 203. Struck out nearly 30% of the time. He was 20 years old in AA. And despite striking out 28% of the time and hitting 203, he hit 30 home runs. So people were losing the shine off him because, well, can he hit the ball? Can he walk? Because I don't think he was walking a whole lot. Maybe he was. Don't remember off the top of my head. I don't think he was walking a whole lot.
It doesn't look like it. I pulled up his stats here.
And where you get lost is how hard it is to be a 20-year-old in AA. I mean, seriously, that's where you get lost. That's where he lost his shine, because he was 20 years old hitting against guys who are, I mean, I don't know the average age of AA, but it's not a small amount older than him. And I know it doesn't matter, but it does. And when you're evaluating a guy, I think that when they're younger, they have a chance to show you something, but it shouldn't hurt their stock so much just because they're less experienced than the guys around them. And it's a fine line to walk, and I get that. But if he were to come out as a 20-year-old in AA and hit 340 home runs, whatever, obviously you're like, yeah, dude, that guy's amazing. But he's 20 in AA in 2021 and hit 203, struck out a lot, still showed he had power, and people were like, I don't know, man, I don't think he's going to hit the ball.
I mean, yeah, you're right. I'm looking at this. I mean, he started in rookie ball at only 17, missed an entire season, 2020.
He missed the COVID season where there was no minor leagues.
Yep, missed COVID. So then he set back a year there. And what you're mentioning about him falling off, showing in his prospect rankings here. So pre-2022, he was 38 Major League Baseball. Pre-2024, so prior to this preseason, he had dropped down to 89. Baseball Prospectus, 62, pre-2022, and then pre this year, 95. So both like you said, almost fell to the top 100 on both of those. So,
and don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying he's going to hit the cover off the ball and be this amazing overall superstar player. I don't think that's true. I don't think his hit tool is even really that great. But I think you get to a fringe hit tool, and I think he winds up probably it's tough to say because I've never seen him in person, and I'm just going off of what I can see on video, which is almost nothing when it comes to scouting their ability to field the baseball. I think he's a second baseman in the future, long-term, if you want to give him the best chance defensively. So I think you're looking at a bat-first second baseman who has power, which isn't awful. I mean, I just described Nolan Gorman. But,
yeah.
But, you know, if he hits 30 home runs, he may never have a high average. He's, you know, fringe hit tool, whatever, but he'll still provide you value. And it's not like he's going to be lost at the plate. And I think he's showing that at AAA right now. I think he just gets dinged for, you know, it's hard to say struggling when he hit 30 home runs, but for kind of not performing to what his numbers would be, you know, if he, you know, necessarily wasn't the youngest guy in the league. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a, well, it's a classic slugger.
Yeah.
You know, with three outcomes, you know, and it, that line, I'm looking at that, it makes you think of like Joey Gallo, and everyone's been so burned on him, you know. Another guy, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but tremendous power, but then he's hitting like below 200 and striking out every other time. That makes you think twice, you know.
So. Right. But do you know how hard, and this goes to your point, actually, do you know how hard it is to be Joey Gallo? And I don't mean that, like, I get he's not performing well and no one, you know, all kind of burn out on the whole Joey Gallo thing, but
you mean just everyone criticizing him?
Not that. I mean, just as a player, for statistical outcome purposes, do you know how hard it is to be Joey Gallo? Like, we kind of think of any potential slugger who can draw walks and strikes out a lot, like, oh, he might just be Joey Gallo. Maybe that's just me. But do you know how hard it is to have that specific skill set? Because you're talking about elite plate recognition to draw those walks, and you're talking about elite power, and then you're just hoping one of those two happens, right? You're talking about two elite skills and hoping that the two-thirds of the good outcomes happen over the one-third of the bad.
You know, I've never really thought about it like that, to be honest. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I saw him last season with the Twins, and they thought we're going to kind of, you know, reclamation project, and he can hit it, pull it down the line, and maybe he'll have some more success. He did hit 21 home runs, but once again, just the strikeouts were crazy. I haven't thought about it like that, though. And yeah, he has over 200 career home runs now with a 196 batting average and 478 walks.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you think about it, I couldn't even tell you a player that comps to his skill set. I really couldn't. And you know, that's crazy that he was able to sustain that for so long, because that's a hard thing to sustain and be a consistent part of a lineup, because, you know, you're hitting 200, but if your OBP is high enough, you're still being productive, I guess. And
I have one name from the past.
Okay.
We'll see if you remember this guy, Rob Deer. Do you know Rob Deer? This is 80. This guy is from the 80s and 90s.
I was born in 95. That explains a lot.
There you go. So he was on the Brewers, and I actually knew him from like a video game. I think it was a Super Nintendo video game.
Mm-hmm.
But I, when you were talking about it, it just popped into my head, and I looked him up. So he was a career 220 hitter, 230 home runs, but had seasons where he struck out 186 times, 175 times. With some seasons of decent number of walks, but that's the only other guy like in that mold I could think of.
Well, and just think about that number of strikeouts back then.
Yeah, right. Right?
Like today, strikeouts are just strikeouts. But back then, when no one was striking out a lot, and you have those crazy stats coming from Tony Gwynn.
Yeah,
about how he never hit a pop fly on a Tuesday and then struck out the following at bat or whatever.
Right. Rob Deer led the Major League Baseball four times in strikeouts, but he had 33 home runs 1 year, 32 home runs. So Rob Deer appreciation discussion, I guess. But that's the only other guy I could ever think of in that mold.
Well, with that, I think there's no better time, Nate, for us to take another quick time out here on Coffee Talk. Appreciate you listening. Of course, we're always ready for that next cup of coffee here. We have more coming up. We're going to talk prospects. I can't wait. I don't know if you heard, Nate. We talked a lot of prospects last week because you weren't there to stop me. We'll have more coming up here on Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth, of course, joined by Nate the Great Kosher. And we have had fun talking about the 2020 draft. We've had fun talking about players that you don't remember from the 1980s and 90s. And now we're going to have fun talking about some prospects. We are going to pick it up with MLB Pipeline's Top 100. We are starting at number 50, technically. I'm going to skip, Nate, over 50, 51, and 52 because none of those players are above high A. That is Dylan Lesko at 50, Noble Meyer at 51, and Xavier Isaac at 52. All very talented baseball players, all worth talking about in their own right. But this is Coffee Talk, and high A does not do a whole lot for us right now. So
no, maybe
I love high A baseball, don't get me wrong. But, you know, we're going to stick to some guys who might help you, which means we're going to start at 53, a guy we've talked about quite a bit already in our previous episodes, and that is Kyle Manzardo. Got to be up soon, right?
Yeah, yeah. That I don't remember. It seems like we talked about him maybe in the first or second episode, but just over the weekend, he had a number of big games. He had three home runs, I saw. And let's see, fourth of the season and third home run in two games over the weekend. So back to back big games. He is the Guardians' number two prospect. Seems like he's once again someone who's kind of figuring out AAA. And we were surprised when we talked about him earlier that he didn't remain with the big league club to start the season. So I think it's probably going to happen soon. A guy who is a big time hitter, power. I would, if he gets called up, maybe you already have him on your team. You've been holding him, but I would look to add him.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? What gets me about this is 52 is Xavier Isaac on MLB Pipeline's Top 100. 53 is Kyle Manzardo, and they are both first basemen, and they were both drafted by Tampa. In case you're wondering if the Rays know how to draft.
Yeah, that's funny to think about. And look at that. And just look at the height and weight comparison. I think Manzardo's, you know, big, powerful guy. And Xavier Isaac is 4 inches and 35 pounds taller. Sorry, 4 inches taller and 35 pounds heavier. That is a slugger. That is
And I'm pretty sure when the Rays drafted Isaac, he was coming off a year where he was hurt in his high school year. And they were just like, yeah, we like what we see. We're going to take him in the first round. And one of the few guys in the last few years who got drafted. And I'm like, who?
Yeah. I mean, the
Rays, maybe you're Isaac, a top 50 prospect, apparently. So,
you know what they're doing. The Rays usually seem to know what they're doing.
That's the rumor. And it's worked out for them so far. I mean, just look at Caballero. My gosh. Like, you're thinking Caminero is going to have to come up soon just because of what happened with, I'm not going to say his name. And they don't. They have Caballero come up, and he's doing fantastic.
Yeah. They just seem to, it's not getting lucky. It's just being good at what you do, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very good at it. So right under Kyle Manzardo at 54 is another guy in AAA. my Detroit Tigers. First-round pick. I was super excited they got Jace Young, brother of Josh Young with the Rangers. I've gotten to see Jace Young live several times. I am very excited about Jace Young always. And I think he's been on a hot streak as far as I can tell lately. He's hitting the cover off the ball. He's showing off his power. He's made adjustments to his swing too. He had a really weird setup when he first entered pro ball, and it's still pretty weird, but it's less weird now. He's kind of reined it in a little bit. It's working for him, man. He's just a hitter. He's one of those who he's hit over everything else. His if he's going to provide value, it's going to be with the bat. He's not necessarily the best defender, but and he's a good hitter, just like his brother. And I'm really excited about him.
So if he, let's say he gets called up, does he slot in at third base because Keith's at second base?
Probably.
Is that
the I would imagine. I think there's going to be some. There's going to be some decisions made because you're going to have Justin Henry Molloy at some point. He can play third base. I think they're putting him at third and not in the outfield. You're going to have Jace Young, who's he can play second, third base. You have Colt Keith, who can play second, third base. Not really any shortstops, unfortunately, but you're going to have to find a place for all these guys to fit in. And maybe obviously maybe one's a DH, maybe you rove an outfielder. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's going to be rough, and they're not going to move on from Torkelson, so that doesn't open up a spot at first base that you can throw someone at. So I think when he comes up, they do put him at third base just because they have to. I don't know that they're going to love doing that. Yeah. And that's the other thing. If they're going to do it and they want to try him at third base, now's the time. Gio Urshela is out.
I saw that. Yep. I just saw that. I was looking at their depth chart.
I will say, I don't know that Jace Young's ready. I think he's just on a hot streak. I think he could still benefit from being down for most of this year in AAA. That's just how I see things.
Sure.
Could be wrong. Maybe he comes up soon and rakes and proves me completely wrong, which was awesome. But I think he could use that extra seasoning. I don't think the Tigers are in any rush with him. They let Justin Henry Molloy sit in AAA all year last year, and he's back there right now. So I think Molloy would get a chance before Jace Young if they're looking to fill that third base spot. But Jace Young, man, he's a great hitter, and I think he's only going to get better. I'm really, really excited about what he can do.
But as far as fantasy outlook, though, immediate between Manzardo and Young, you'd say Manzardo. Pick up Manzardo first, right?
Manzardo, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. MLB Pipeline has Jace Young's timeline as 2024. So it's very possible he does debut this year. And if he does, he might be worth a spec ad. We'll have to see if his hot streak keeps up. And we will update it if that happens. So moving on, 55, Aiden Miller. He's an A-ball. We're going to skip over him. Jared Jones, we've talked about quite a bit. He's at 56. And at 57, he's in Double A right now. MLB Pipeline says he'll help you out in 2024. We'll see what happens. He might be a little too young for their rotation. And that is Tink Hentz with the Cardinals. And that was just a joke because the Cardinals' average rotation age is 35, I think. And I'm not kidding.
No, you're not.
I'm not kidding. I think that's the actual average age of their rotation. So they might not want Tink Hentz to come up and join their rotation and ruin it.
Their offseason pickup, they got Lance Lynn, mm-hmm. and then didn't they get Kyle Gibson as well?
Yep. Yeah.
Two veterans who have been around forever, it seems like.
And they, I was looking this up, entering this week, as you can imagine, with their level of experience in their rotation, seasoning, if you will, they average the second lowest velocity of any team on their fastball this year.
Well, that's interesting. So in my pitcher list, risers and fallers, my first column, I was kind of marking down Lance Lynn. He had a bad first start, and he had a bad year last year, and I said I think drop in velocity and better outcomes for pitchers, and he's just getting older, it's not going to work. And now he's reeled off like three good starts, and I think his ERA sits about 2 on the year. So I need to be careful if I'm going to criticize the Cardinals pitchers.
But Kyle Gibson experience comes in. Right. I mean, they're not throwing as hard, but that's where their experience comes in. And just to throw this out there, Sonny Gray, 34 and a half years old. Lance Lynn, this is on just Fangraphs, and they have a decimal. Lance Lynn, 36.9 years old. Steven Matz is the baby of the group, 32.9 years old. Kyle Gibson, 36 and a half years old. Miles Michaelis, 35.7.
Yeah, you see, that was not an exaggeration.
No, they're veterans. True. Yeah, yeah, and that works. You know, Tink Hens might do well out of the bullpen when he first makes his debut. I think that could be super helpful for him. But he's got electric stuff. He's a guy I have seen. I mean, he pitched in Peoria last year. I've seen him. Okay. And he's got really, really fun stuff. I love his slider and I love his changeup. I know people like his fastball and it's a really loose motion, which is awesome. And he's got, arm action's great, but I like his off speed pitches a lot. And I think he's really grown in terms of using them. And that's been a big thing for him.
Yeah, and he's off to a great start. It looks like he's made 3 starts so far, holding the opponents to 1.17 ERA, 16 strikeouts, and a 0.59 whip. So his most recent start, he exited the game after reaching a career high 83 pitches. So there it is again, of course, keeping our young pitchers safe. But, yeah, that could be fun. I mean, the Cardinals, they're a team that they try to win every year, obviously, and trying to bounce back after a bad season last year. So
not going great so far.
No, it's not. But that could affect what his timeline.
It very well might. You're right. That's a good point. It very well could. I mean, one way or the other, they might say, oh, we're not competing, we'll just let him season. Or they might say, oh, we're not competing, let's just give him a shot, get him some experience this year.
Yep. Yep.
So that could go one of two ways. Usually with the Cardinals, I would imagine if they're not competing, he's just going to stay down. My read on that organization. But we'll see. A couple more. I don't know if we necessarily need to talk about Kevin Alcantara from the Cubs for coffee talk purposes. He is one of my favorite prospects in baseball right now. So I am all in on Kevin Alcantara and the upside of Kevin Alcantara and what he can do as a baseball player. It's still very high variance. And yes. I just don't know if it's something that I just don't think he'll make the Cubs this year at any point, personally.
No, they have him marked here at 2025, probably could add a little bit more weight to his frame. And get a little bit stronger, but great athlete.
Supreme athlete.
Yeah. Yes.
Covers the zone really well with power. We'll go with a pitch. We'll put it over the fence. I didn't mean to cut you off, Nate. I'm so sorry. But I love Kevin Alcantara.
Go for it. I was looking something up. That was fine.
Yeah. It's just, he's, you know, it just what he does works. I really love his, I'm a huge fan of his, what he can do with the plate. Like I said, he covers the zone really well with his barrel and can hit the ball really far. He's very athletic. He just has these, it's hard to tell sometimes over video. So I want to put that out there, right? I've never scouted him live in person. So it's hard to tell sometimes over video, but you just see him on video make these plays. And it just seems like he has this natural baseball instinct that other people just don't have. One play particularly comes to mind. I think it was a single or something that got hit. He's playing center field. This was a couple of years ago. And he just, the ball bounces and it takes a weird hop away from him. He just catches it with his hand. Who needs a glove, right?
Yeah, I'll just snatch that right up.
You can look it up. Look up Kevin Alcantara and my X account at Huth Trevor. If you search that, you will find this video because I tweeted something along the lines of Kevin Alcantara has evolved past the need of a baseball glove.
I'll check that out. That's great.
And it's just, it's crazy the things I see. So I think he's going to be really good. I think that was a really good pickup by them when they got him in that Anthony Rizzo deal from the Yankees. And there's just so much baseball upside there. And I got the same way about Denzel Clark, who we've talked about too. Or maybe I talked about him last week and not to you, but I got super into it. And I do love those outfielders who are athletic and have this super high upside, and they're just so high variance and high risk.
It is. Yeah. It's fun. So that, I mean, they're fun.
Mm-hmm. That's the risk you take. But in terms of baseball skill and plate skills, Kevin O'Connor over Denzel Clark. That's reflected in every prospect ranking ever. But I'm just like, he's so much fun at the plate. Anyway, next guy probably could help you. Last guy we're going to talk about. He's got a brother who is also pretty decent at baseball. This is number 59. Luis Angel Acuña. L.A. Acuña is what he's known as. His brother plays for the Braves. He's an outfielder. Nate, quick quiz. Can you name his brother?
You know, it rings a bell. He might have won the MVP last season. Is it Ronald?
Well, yeah, that is who it is. I don't know about the MVP thing. I don't know. Yeah. So his brother, right? L.A. Acuña is obviously Ronald Acuña's brother. And that gives... And I saw it from the second L.A. Acuña entered baseball. It gives him a lot of expectation just based on his family tree. And I think that expectation is unfair because we're looking at a completely different kind of player.
Yes. Yeah, he's a lot smaller, isn't he? Definitely not as strong.
Yes, he is. He's a lot smaller. L.A. Acuña is listed at, let me pull it up, 5'8", 181. And also, you're looking at an infielder instead of an outfielder. You're looking at a guy who I don't think he has the power that his brother has. I think he's more hit over power than anything else. Still, yeah, some speed, so, still can do some things, but he doesn't have that just crazy, crazy baseball upside that his brother has.
And to be fair, I mean, not many people do, right? So that for him, I could see it being kind of a two-edged sword because he has the name recognition, and you'd think maybe teams would maybe give him a little extra leash because they're like, well, what if he turns out like his brother? What if he's that good? I don't think he is probably quite that good. No, he's not that good, but he could still be a solid baseball player, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. And it's interesting to think about. There have been brothers throughout baseball, right, over the years. And you think of like the famous brothers, and then there's the not so famous brothers, but they still can carve out a career.
And
right here, he's stolen 40 bags in 3 straight seasons. He has the arm and range to be a solid shortstop. So, you know, he could be a Major League Baseball player, but it's pretty hard to be like a five-tool MVP that your brother is.
Right. And he will be a Major League Baseball player. I mean, he is very talented. And I think I wrote a report about him several years back, same cycle where I wrote about the reliever in Boston now.
Slayton,
Justin Slayton. Yeah. And I didn't pull that one up. Maybe I will here in a second, but you know, I always thought he was a solid baseball player. I just thought it was unfair. Cause what happens is we see the name, and then it doesn't help that L.A. Acuña's stance is like the little brother stance to Ronald Acuña's stance. You know what I mean? Like, it looks very similar. It is as close as you're going to get. And that in itself, people go, oh man, look at the name, look at the stance. We got another one.
Yeah.
But that's never been the case with him. And it's almost a case of public perception, just kind of taking it and running with it because he has that last name. And it's not something that every brother runs into. I mean, Jace Young doesn't necessarily have that. I haven't seen it.
True.
And we just talked about him. Granted, his brother's not Ronald Acuña. His brother is Josh Young, who is also talented, but hasn't really established himself as a perennial MVP candidate. Yeah, but you're right. I mean,
different level.
Family members can happen. I mean, for some reason, I'm thinking of the Leiter pitching dynasty right now. Yeah. Al Leiter, his son Jack Leiter just debuted against the Tigers. Didn't go well. Mark Leiter, I believe the senior was a pitcher back in the day. I think that's Al's brother's name. And Mark Leiter Jr. is in that family as well. Maybe it was a different Leiter. The older Leiters, I might get their names wrong, but Mark Leiter Jr. is with the Cubs and pitching really well. It's like, you know, these families can happen. It's just they sometimes aren't, you know, as good as their sibling, and that's how it works.
Yeah, not to go back to the 80s and 90s again, but I was thinking of Billy Ripken, you know, Cal Ripken Jr.'s brother, but I think most people have heard of him, and I was just pulling up his stats. He played 12 years, 912 games, career 247 batting average. I mean, not great offensive numbers, but I mean, there it is. He carved out a 12-year major league career, you know? So that's many people aspire to do that. It doesn't mean he's as good as his brother, but he still made it on his own hard work and merit.
Yeah. So I did pull up my old scouting report again. This would have appeared on Prospects Live several years ago. At this point, I think 2021 was that area. I graded him out as 55 hit, 45 power, 60 field, 55 throw, 50 run. So I was low on the run, and a 45 OFP. He's actually played beyond that. I was low on him. I got that wrong.
Okay.
Let's see, just skipping over this stuff. Just overall, I said with famous name comes big expectation. Yeah. I said he's already proven more than capable with the glove. Gives him an intriguing floor to determine what his bat is. He's an above average hitter with the capability of reaching average or better grade on his power potentially. Said he, I didn't think he'd wind up an infielder. Apparently I got that wrong again. Defense can be hard. And I said, he's not going to have as much power as his brother, but he should be able to hit and play solid defense. And I think that's,
there you go. That's,
I was low on the ability of the skills, but I had the archetype, right? He's going to hit.
Yeah.
Play a solid defense. And that the Mets thought that was worth trading for, cause he was with Texas. And they just traded for him. I can't remember what the trade was, but the Mets saw value in him and brought him to the same division that his brother plays in. And I think that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah. So, L.A. Acuna could help you out this year. He's in AAA. For fantasy purposes, I tend to shy away from hit over power guys.
Yeah.
So
I don't think he's that exciting for fantasy purposes, but he could have a impact in real life baseball.
Yeah, and I think fantasy, I mean, he's kind of, I don't think he's worth the ad if he gets called up. I think you have to wait and see, which is a risky game to play in case he is good, but unless you have that roster spot that you can just churn, I don't know if Acuna is the guy you're going to go after if when he gets called up. I think there's probably better options out there.
Yep.
And with that, we're wrapping up episode 6 of Coffee Talk. Appreciate everyone for listening. Make sure to follow us on at Coffee Talk PL on X. You can follow my co-host Nate Kosher at Nathaniel Kosher.
That's right.
Nathaniel Kosher on X. You can find me at Huth Trevor. You'd think by episode 6 I would know your Twitter handle offhand. I blame you taking a week off, but we got there anyway. It's all right. Nate, always, we're glad to have you back. And of course, make sure to keep checking, because we're going to have new episodes every single week here on Coffee Talk, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. So once again, for Nate Kosher, my name is Trevor. Appreciate you listening to Coffee Talk as a part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network.